Welcome back to What's at Risk. I'm Mike Christian.
You want furs and jewelry too, and I'm supposed to bring them to you. I'm so tired of working for you. I'm so tired of working for you.
In the world of work, times are tough. Many companies are reeling from fluctuations in the current economy. While some individuals have already been laid off, others struggle to hold on to their jobs. Those who are in positions of authority, managers, supervisors, and department heads, feel intense pressure to prove their value. In addition to salvaging their own jobs, they must also ensure that their remaining employees produce results, and most of these bosses are operating with limited resources. Working under such stressful conditions, they bring out the worst in your boss. Your once reasonable supervisor may now exhibit some or all of the following behaviors: finding fault with everything you do, taking credit for your work, micromanaging you, delivering random verbal attacks, refusing to make decisions, and neglecting the staff.
Big boss man can't you hear me when I call?
You're weary, you're frustrated, you're unhappy, you're demotivated. Your interaction with your boss leaves you cold. He's a bad boss, bad to the bone. Dealing with a less than effective manager or just plain bad managers and bad bosses is a challenge to many employees today. Sound familiar? Sooner or later, we all work for someone we can't stand. A constant criticizer, a yeller, a power-hungry jerk, or someone who's just mentally checked out. But if you can't afford to quit, and few of us can in this economy, the only real option is to deal with it.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
What is your problem?
In their previous bestseller, Working With You Is Killing Me, Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster help people deal with troublesome coworkers. Now they're taking on toxic bosses in Working For You Isn't Working For Me, the ultimate guide to managing your boss.
I'm going to lose my job.
Violet, now just calm down.
I'm no fool. I've killed the boss. You think they're not going to fire me for a thing like that?
Thank you.
Boss man, can't you see? 18 kidney shoes on the beat. I work all day, the overtime.
After years of advising clients, Crowley, a psychotherapist, and Elster, a business strategist, found that the single greatest determinant of happiness at work is the quality of your relationship with your boss. When it's bad, you either become insecure or so resentful that you end up looking petty or incompetent. Crowley and Elster offer a better option: reclaiming control of the relationship so you can be happier at your work and move your career forward. Catherine Crowley, a Harvard-trained psychotherapist, and Kathy Elster, a management consultant, create the yin and yang of their company, K-Squared Enterprises. Since 1989, They've combined their complementary expertise to develop a unique method for dealing with difficult people and challenging conditions at work. Their inside-out approach transforms the way businesses uncover and resolve their greatest interpersonal dilemmas. Best-selling authors, educators, public speakers, and veteran consultants, Catherine and Kathy are seasoned guides in the area of professional fulfillment through self-awareness and self-management. They use humor and a slew of engaging techniques to mediate solutions for individuals at every level of employment, from executives to managers to frontline employees.
We have Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster, the authors of Working For You Isn't Working For Me. And maybe I'll just start with asking sort of a basic question. Is the relationship between an employee and their boss the biggest factor that impacts their job satisfaction?
You know, unfortunately, we have to say it is. What we like to say is when your relationship with your boss is good, life is good. When your relationship with your boss isn't good, life is bad. It really has a tremendous impact on how we feel about ourselves.
And there's actually data to support that, Mike. Studies show that people quit their bosses, not the company.
Yeah.
So even if you love what you're doing and you hate your boss, it could make you leave your job or shut down on the job.
Unfortunately, people don't usually leave the work. They leave the relationship that was so difficult. The work, what we actually go to do each day, is not the difficult part of our day. What's difficult is how people hold us back or talk to us poorly or just treat us in a bad way. And usually it is the authority figure. It usually is the boss. I mean, we do have issues with our colleagues, but that we can work through. The problems with the boss, there is something that happens. You know, the authority, they have a control over us. They have power over us. And we tend to become powerless around them.
And from an employee's perspective, what are some of the earmarks of a bad boss or the things that create a bad relationship with their boss?
Well, there are a wide range of things that could create a bad relationship. But actually, one of the things we talk about is a key indicator is your experience. So if you're getting mixed messages from your boss, or you feel like you can't win, or you feel like every day you come and it's a different directive from them, usually you're going to have this feeling that it's confusing, that, you know, there's no winning in the situation. And so your reaction to this person, whether the behavior is that they're a yeller or they're an underminer or they're always changing course, your reaction will tell you that there's a problem at hand.
Now, certainly the economy has exacerbated the behavior of bosses, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, absolutely. What we're seeing is that the stress of today's economy puts extra stress on the bosses. So if your boss was a micromanager to begin with, they're really picking out. You know, it's just bringing out not the best behavior in people. And everybody's under that kind of, you know, microscope and pressure right now. You could be the next to go. You don't really know. So it's very tense.
In your book, you cite some of the different types of bosses, like the chronic critic and the calculating confidant and the love-struck boss and the rule-changer and the persecutor. Maybe you can just expand a little bit on those types of bosses.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the chronic critic because we hear a lot of complaints about the boss that just finds what's wrong in everything you do. They have a tendency to not acknowledge what goes right. They always find the small mistake, which really grates on people's confidence. The yeller, kind of obvious. I don't think the yeller wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to go yell at somebody. They just have uncontrollable rage, and they bring it into the workplace. They just have a fuse. There's a control freak, kind of obvious. Also, the person who everything has to go by them. You cannot even order a tissue box without them approving it, and that's very annoying for most people.
Yeah, and I'll jump in with the rule changer, which I think actually that kind of person can really drive you crazy, especially when you're in uncertain times, you know. And for this boss, the priority change is every day and maybe moment to moment. First, they tell you to go complete this project, then they tell you to rearrange the office. And with this kind of boss, you never know where you're supposed to focus your energies, and it's very confusing.
But these are just human frailties that most people have. How do...
And, you know, they are all behaviors. They're not personalities.
Right.
And we want to really make a distinction that you could love your boss. They could be terrific, really encouraging, great to get along with. But then maybe they're somewhat spineless and they're not good at getting you raises. So they have a behavior that upsets you. So it's not necessarily the whole person.
Well, how do these people get into positions of authority then?
Well, that's a really good question. What we find is that people are promoted because of their skill.
Their expertise.
Right, not because of their management style. And then there's very little management training. And also, you have to remember that it's not just the boss, it's also what you as the employee brings to that dynamic. So, you know, you almost have to be a therapist to be a good manager, because how do you read everybody? You know, it takes time.
And one of the things we're trying to encourage people to do, Mike, is to take the relationship into their hands and manage it.
Right.
You know, really figure out, who is this person? How am I reacting to them? What can I do to make the situation better? Which is, it's difficult to do if you're feeling angry, resentful, confused. It's hard to really step back. And that's what our four steps of detect, detach, depersonalize, and deal, we make a very customized plan for each person of how to manage the relationship.
You know, we have a tendency to lay on our bosses the same thing we put on our parents. You know, you take care of me. You're responsible for this relationship. But the truth is, as adults, that's not accurate. We really need to understand what we bring to that relationship and what's triggering in us, what they're triggering in us, and to be more responsible.
You know, and I certainly agree that everybody's responsible for the, you know, the depth and scope of the relationships that they have with their boss. But back to how people get into that position of authority, it seems like it's more of a breakdown in just the way American business operates in terms of how people get promoted. So you're a good sales guy, so they make you a sales manager.
Right.
But you have no skills for managing people, obviously. How do we deal with that on a bigger perspective? Or maybe it's just something that has to evolve.
I think that's such a great question.
Yeah.
You know, we see it in certain industries where bad behavior is actually rewarded. I mean, you see it a lot on Wall Street. It's not about how you manage people. It's about how you bring in the dough. And it doesn't matter what kind of personality you exhibit. And I agree with you. I think that we have been focused on the wrong thing. We haven't been focused on people and how to get the best out of people. We haven't. We've been focused on, you know, money.
And to answer your question, I think what companies could do is to really try to cultivate the interpersonal skills of the people who they put into leadership positions. So management training seems to be right now a thing of the past,
right.
But executive coaching is coming into play again, does seem to be, and that's something that any company could invest even just 10, 20 hours for a new leader in some executive coaching so that they could learn how to handle the people who are reporting to them.
And we're trying to do our part. I mean, we're trying to really impart these sort of new way of thinking, bringing psychology into the workplace, and just a whole new way of perceiving these workplace dynamics, which have really been brushed under the carpet for years.
Yeah, and I think you made an interesting point, but maybe I'll ask a follow-up question in terms of people sort of transferring a relationship that they've had maybe with their parents or,
right.
You know, with a spouse or something like that to their boss.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And then the boss maybe does the same thing, you know, in terms
That's
of
right.
what they're bringing into, because we're all bringing in all this experience from our
That's
whole
right.
lives into the workplace.
Yeah, we like to say that every work relationship is like watching a chemistry experiment.
Right.
You know, you're combining elements, and actually we designed this book, Mike, so that you can look at the ingredients that your boss is bringing and the ingredients you're bringing and see what, you know, what's the chemistry, what's happening here, and how can I change it? You know, if I'm working for someone who's very controlling and I'm someone who likes to challenge authority, where can I get the ability to express my ideas, where can I experience that elsewhere and still be respectful of the person who needs a lot of control?
Mm-hmm.
This from the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu. If the sage would guide the people, he must serve with humility. If he would lead them, he must follow behind. In this way, when the sage rules, the people will not feel oppressed. When he stands before them, they will not be harmed. The whole world will support him and will not tire of him. Because he does not compete, he does not meet competition. They say that people join companies and leave managers. This is very much a true fact, so it becomes much more important to ask what makes a great manager. If you're a manager and you're not asking what makes a great manager, then you're missing out on some key information that will make your job easier and your employees' job easier and more fulfilling. So what are some of the things that make a great manager?
The good news is you're fired. The bad news is you've got all you've got just 1 week to regain your job, starting with tonight. Starting with tonight's sit.
Oh, have I got your attention now? Good.
Walking boss, I don't belong to you.
A great manager listens first, then responds. Your employees will want to tell you ideas, concerns, information, and general day-to-day chatter. Even if you are prepared to disagree, let your employee finish with their communication. People have a natural drive to be heard, and allowing employees to finish their statements goes a long way in building respect.
Walking boss, I don't belong to you.
A great manager recognizes positive actions and efforts. When your employees complete something successfully or show initiative, recognize it. Not everyone is motivated only by money. They need recognition, even if it's not public. Great managers know that employees feed off acknowledgement that their job is being done well.
Sometimes it's worse, though, when you have a lady boss, like especially if she tries to act like she's your friend. Because you're honey and sweetheart and girlfriend. Hey! I want you to take a break. Take a walk. Get out of this office and get me a latte. And it's 2% milk. You should know that by now. And hey, I'm having a party at my house this weekend. And I really want you to come and you'll meet some really cute, really available men at the door. Park their cars, take their coats, and speak only when spoken to. I see us as friends, as equals, even though I earn, 850% more than you do? And you spend 12 hours a day here stuck in this office while I drive aimlessly around the city looking for caves and tunnels where I can call you with my cell phone.
And great managers set clear expectations. Employees should always know what you expect of them. One of the easiest ways to do this is to set deliverable milestones for each employee over a set period of time. Then review the employee's performance versus the milestone and discuss ways to improve or congratulate them on a job well done and set new goals.
I love this job. Did you ever like your job but then feel like, oh, I wonder if we could take it to the next level? You know, like I could be an accountant but also be a cloud? Every year, rain down upon people. But I work a lot by myself, and I do really miss camaraderie of working in a place, you know, being with other people because I'm by myself most of the time, and I miss the, where do I go for lunch?
We're here with Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster, co-authors of Working For You Isn't Working For Me.
But I don't belong to me.
Do you think getting into a position of authority changes people for the worse?
I think, you know, we know that it does. We know that it changes the dynamic, that when you're, you know, at a lower position, you probably look at authority and make fun of them. And, you know, and then once you're there, you realize that you're privy to information that maybe you don't know when you're not in that position. And also, you have to make some tough decisions. And sometimes those tough decisions, you're not going to be liked.
And I'll say that what I find from a psychological perspective is when someone is promoted to an authority position, they often start to try out behaviors that they think embody authority. You know, so someone thinks that they should be very decisive and very certain and no one should buck against them. If that's in their idea of what authority is, that's how they'll behave. Someone else who wants to be collaborative and have everyone get along, that's how they're going to try and lead the staff.
Now, the culture of the company obviously impacts the relationships too, right?
Absolutely.
So if bad behavior is allowed in the culture of a company, then, you know, it's something that can continue to happen in the relationship between a boss and a subordinate.
That's right. Yeah, and actually it's such a great point to make, because often when we go into companies and someone's complaining about their boss, we have to ask them to look at the culture. You know, why is it that this culture is allowing this kind of person? Let's say it's a very manipulative person. Why are they allowing that? Well, it could be that the people at the top find that to be not so an offensive behavior if they bring in a lot of business.
So what can people do? I know you talked about your process there, detect, detach, depersonalize. Maybe you can just give a little bit of an overview of what we can do to...
Yeah, really, you know, if you look at people that do well personally in the workplace, they're very good at detaching and depersonalizing and not taking other people's behavior personally. They're able to look at somebody and say, oh, well, that's the way they are, and they move on. Now, even saying that, that's not simple, but one of the first things people can do is three things, because when you're in a toxic relationship, your energy gets really drained. So restoring your energy is a really big part of what we write about, and that could be exercise, meditation, whatever works for you to help you restore, because on a daily basis, you're going to get drained. We also like you to repair your emotional state, and because that's another piece that's going to be, you know, kind of frazzled all day long, and people have a tendency to go home, isolate, and just feel really bad, maybe overeat, oversleep. So we suggest you actually go out. Do not isolate. Connect with people that support you, that really see how good you are, what you do. Join organizations. So the opposite of what is in, you know, what we tend to do, we want you to do the opposite. And the third is rebuilding your confidence, because there's a real breakdown of confidence when you're in a toxic environment. So that could be writing down your successes every day, maybe calling a boss that you did get along with and meeting them weekly so that they can tell you how well you're doing, join an organization and, you know, get on a project that you'll feel good about. So you should always be working on yourself.
And as Kathy's saying, if you do those things, you detect the kind of boss you have and take those actions to detach and retake back your personal power, then you can go to the next step, which is depersonalizing, and that's really not taking the behavior of your boss personally. So whether they're a rule changer, a liar, a yeller, whatever they are, that you realize they've done this from the beginning of time, they'll do it after you leave your position. Don't take it personally. And also see what fears may be triggered for you. And then our final step, the deal, is to take actions to move your career forward and to manage the relationship. And for that, once you go through our process and figure out your profile and the boss you're working with, we have very specific things you can do in the moment to manage that relationship and behind the scenes to both manage the relationship and move your career forward.
Of course, in today's times, I'm sure there's a lot more emotion associated with all these steps in the process because of the general overhanging fear of losing their job, right?
Yes.
That's why it's really important to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, that you're joining, you're networking, that you're always out there, not sitting home and worrying about it, biting your nails, but really being proactive for yourself.
And we can't emphasize how challenging that is when you're in a bad relationship, because, you know, human nature is to hunker down and either try and fix it or escape from it.
Well, I think that's all great advice. Did we miss anything?
we could talk for a long time. You know, we cover all the fears that we have of authority. And this has nothing to do with the economy. This is just, you know, what people bring. And I'll use an example of the person who fears that they're not being heard. So what that person does when they feel as they're not being heard is they have a tendency to repeat themselves and sometimes even louder, and then the boss stops hearing them.
Right?
So our fears are self-fulfilling prophecies. So in Working For You Isn't Working For Me, there's an assessment, and it's important for you to figure that out. What are my workplace fears? What do I bring? Because I want to stop acting them out, because that will really hurt you. Because right now, everybody's fear is being activated.
Yeah, for sure.
And you walk in and you can actually see, oh, he's afraid of this. You know, you can almost see it.
Yeah, it's definitely palpable, no question. So we've been talking to Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster, the authors of Working For You Isn't Working For Me. How can we find out more about the book?
Oh, you can go to Amazon.com or you can read a chapter on our website, WorkingForYouIsn'tWorkingForMe.com.
That's it for this week's edition of What's at Risk. I'd like to thank our guests tonight, Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster, authors of Working For You Isn't Working For Me, and Matt Harrison, the author of The American Evolution. I'd like to thank our producer, Johnny Pfister of Ringo Studio, and our associate producer, Scott Cooper.
For podcasts or downloads of What's at Risk, go to WBZ.com, click on the On the Air drop-down menu, then click on What's at Risk. If you can't get to a radio on Saturday night at 11 p.m., and want to stream What's at Risk as we broadcast, simply click on WBZ.com and on the Listen Live link.
You've been listening to What's at Risk, heard every Saturday night on WBZ News Radio 1030 and streaming on WBZ.com.
Are you ready? Are you not for the risk you run? The risk you run. All it takes is all you got for the risk you run. The risk you run. Run the risk or you'll never.
When your company is considering risk management and consultative support for your business insurance, make the right choice and call Risk Strategies Company. With offices in Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Irvine, California, Chicago, and Providence, Risk Strategies Company takes a team approach to protecting your assets efficiently and cost-effectively. By offering a wide range of services and capabilities, Risk Strategies Company brings the highest level of expertise to clients in all areas of insurance and risk management, delivering insurance solutions, extensive carrier relationships and marketing expertise, claim advocacy, loss control safety management, health and welfare coverage, life and executive compensation plans, personal insurance lines, and surety. For the most comprehensive risk management and insurance coverage for your business, depend on Risk Strategies Company. Learn more at risk-strategies.com or call 617-330-5700. 617-330-5700.